Jesus made some shocking claims. We started this series on Easter Sunday. Jesus actually said this three times that's recorded in the Gospels, multiple Gospels. He said, "I will rise from the dead." And then he did, and everyone was still shocked. The next message we listened to was "Follow Me." Pastor Tom preached that. And that doesn't sound that shocking, right? You've probably seen little kids playing Follow the Leader at the park or something like that, and to follow them up the slide and then over and swing on the swings. Well, follow me in this context. What Jesus is really saying is leave your whole life, the way that you made a living, everything, and come follow me. That actually is a lot different, isn't it? Pretty shocking. Last week, the message Seth Dorman preached was the first will be last and the last will be first. And Jesus just has this habit when he speaks of sort of flipping and saying the opposite of what you would expect. And that's what last week's message was about. This morning is I can make a lot with a little. Now, if you're wondering, when did Jesus say that? He didn't actually say it with words, but he said it with actions. We're going to look at a miracle that he did that really did reveal that Jesus can do a whole lot with a very tiny amount. But I'm going to start with a story where I experienced a lot from a little. When I was a little boy, I loved fishing. Now, I still really like fishing, but when I was about 7 to 11, I loved fishing, like lived for it. We were on a camping trip, my dad's side of the family. He has three sisters and a brother. I think everyone was there, all these cousins. It was wild. We all camped in tents. Probably none of you do that anymore, but all of us did. We were all in tents, and it rained one night, I think the first night. It wasn't like everything got soaked rain, but it was sort of like a light drizzle. But that actually gave us something to do. My aunts and uncles got their flashlights and led all of us cousins out, and we went out and went night crawler hunting, which makes fishing even better when you catch your own bait first, at least when you're 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 like I was. So we collected a whole bunch of night crawlers, and I don't remember this exactly, but I bet I didn't sleep very well. And I know I didn't sleep very long because I was up before the sun was up, and I grabbed a bunch of those night crawlers in a can. We had a bunch of containers of them, and I went down to the dock. And the reason I did that is we had rented a boat, as if the whole family had a boat. And the next morning was scheduled to be the adult-only trip, and I was not old enough for that. But I wasn't going to miss out on the opportunity to go fishing in the morning. So I'm fishing on the dock, and then I see the boat go by, and they kind of wave at me, and I wave at them, and they go out there. What I didn't realize is that I had taken all but two or three of the night crawlers. And what the adults didn't realize till they were way on the other side of the lake was that I had taken all but two or three of the night crawlers. And so they weren't sure what to do. They didn't really want to come all the way back. So we were just fishing probably for like bluegills or crappie or whatever would bite. We weren't like hardcore fishermen. What they did between the six or seven of them that were in the boat is they divided two or three night crawlers by six or seven people, which means you get a little piece of a worm on your hook. We had been hoping, because the fishing was like, oh, we caught a few fish, like maybe we could actually catch enough fish to feed everybody, which is probably 20 or 30 people. And I caught a few fish off the dock that contributed to the fish, but you know, when you fish off the dock, you catch a lot of fish about this big, and every once in a while you catch a fish that's maybe just barely big enough, because you're a young boy, that it'll get cleaned for supper. That's kind of my experience. Couple just barely big enough to be cleaned. And what I found out later was my dad actually was in that boat, and he was fishing with a third or a quarter of a night crawler, and he caught a bass, like a pound or two, which was probably bigger than anything that we had caught. But as he was reeling it into the boat, a large northern chomped onto that bass, did not let go, and they landed the bass and the northern, and because he caught that northern on a quarter of an inch of night crawler, we actually had a meal for our whole extended family with extra chips and potato salad and whatever else, I'm sure. That's my personal experience of how a lot can be made from a little. Today, we're going to look at a similar situation that does involve some fish that Jesus does, which is that doesn't even compare to. The disciple, I'm going to give you some background first. We're going to look in Mark chapter 6. By the way, the reason you got lyrics is because our projector has been going on and off. We need to get it maintained. I don't really know, and I won't be surprised if it stops at any point this week. Maybe we'll get it fixed this week if we can get someone in. But just so you know, if you get lyrics, that's why. In case they go away in the middle of a song, just grab that sheet. While I'm preaching the next few weeks, just have your Bible or Bible app open, because I'm not sure if the points will be up there or not. I'll tell you where to go in your Bible or on your phone or your device. But Mark 6 is where we're going to look. And I'm going to back up. We're actually going to look at Mark 6, 30 through 44. That's where we're going to focus, but I'm going to back up a little bit, because in Mark 6, 12 through 13, what has happened so far, Jesus has called the disciples to follow him. They have been following him for a while, and in Mark chapter 6, he basically commissions the 12 disciples to go out and do some of the kinds of things that they have, that Jesus has been doing. So they're going to do some preaching. They're going to do some miracles. They're going to cast out some demons from demon-possessed people. Mark chapter 6, verse 12 says this. So they went out and preached that people should repent. They drove out many demons, anointed many sick people with oil, and healed them. And now they came back. They're pretty excited to talk about this. I want to tell you, these guys weren't college-educated equivalent. There were people like that in this society. They didn't have colleges and universities, but there was an equivalent to that. But later, after Jesus rose from the dead and he ascended into heaven and it was only disciples on earth, here's an observation that the crowds made when two of these disciples, Peter and John, which were included in this group, this is what Acts 4:13 says, when the crowd observed the boldness of Peter and John and realized that they were uneducated and untrained men, they were amazed and recognized that they had been with Jesus. I'm just pointing this out at the beginning because this idea of Jesus being able to do a lot with a little is happening already before the miracle of 5,000. These disciples were a little. They did not have a good education. They did not necessarily have good reputations. But they did things that they should not have been able to do when Jesus sent them out. And they returned back to Jesus and were probably excited to talk about with each other. Just like, you know, you have an exciting thing happen and you've been gone from your family, or in this case, your friends that you've been spending a lot of time with. You want to talk about what happened. They were in that place. But it wasn't just kind of enthusiasm, surprise, and joy over what happened that the disciples were experiencing. They were also experiencing deep grief and loss. The next part of the Bible, if you open it up, after they had returned, is Mark 6, 14 through 29, tells the story of how John the Baptist was killed. He was executed by Herod. He was beheaded. This was Jesus' cousin and friend of the disciples. So they're also in grief and loss. And so then we come to our passage. It says in Mark 6:29 that John's disciples heard about it. That was John the Baptist. They came and they buried his body. But then in Mark chapter 6, verse 30, that's where we're going to start our passage this morning. Verse 30 says this, the apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all that they had done and taught. And Jesus said to them, come away by yourselves to a remote place and rest for a while. Very kind. You've had a pretty emotionally intense week. You've seen things that you don't understand. You've done things you never expected to be able to do. And on top of all that, I know that you're carrying grief, and it's pretty emotionally charged time. Let's go to a remote place and rest. And then it describes how busy they were. For many people were coming and going, and they did not even have time to eat. You've probably had some of those seasons in your life where you forgot to eat because you were so busy. You didn't get your break at work. It was too busy. This was kind of a long season like that for the disciples. And so Jesus and the disciples went away, verse 32 says. They went away in the boat by themselves to a remote place. Let's just Get away from the crowds. You know, even when you're an extrovert, when you get energy by being around people, at some point you need a break. Maybe there's one or two of you that disagree. That's fine. You might be like, I could do Six Flags forever, every day. I'm cool with it as long as I have my best friends along. My guess is you'll need a break at some point. The disciples needed a break. They were going to get their break, and then verse 33, if you're an introvert right now, you are like starting to have a mini panic attack for the disciples, like I am. But many saw them leaving and recognized them, and they ran on foot from all the towns and arrived ahead of them. So let's go on a retreat, and when we get there, there is thousands of people. I would like not get off the boat and just go back to the other side. That would be my first inclination. But when Jesus went ashore, it says in verse 34, he saw a large crowd and had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. Now, I want to just help you remember, Jesus had compassion on the disciples because they needed a break. Guys, let's go get away and have some time alone so that you can recover your life. And when they decide to go do that, they come across the lake. Jesus doesn't get mad because his plan or their plan was disrupted. He actually has the same kind of compassion for the crowd as he has for the disciples, which I think is important to note. And then he began to teach them many things. Now, he had every right to be bothered or annoyed. He was probably tired as well. Again, he was fully man who probably hadn't had time to eat either. But he had compassion on the crowds and he decided to give them what they needed. And then in verse 35 says this, when it grew late, as you can imagine, the sun is getting lower in the sky, his disciples approached him. I don't know, they might have been a little tired, could be a little hangry, something like that, and said, this place is deserted. We are in the middle of nowhere, Jesus, and it's already late. Send the crowds away so that they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages to buy themselves something to eat. Now, you might be thinking the disciples just want to get rid of the crowd. That could be what's going on. I actually think the disciples were showing some of the same compassion they had been shown by Jesus for the crowd, saying, these people are getting hungry. They didn't bring anything with them. We need to do something about their need. Let's send them back to the villages so they can actually get some food and not start passing out on us. What Jesus says next, I guess, is probably more shocking than having your wife say to you 3 weeks before she's due that her water broke. He says to them, he looks at them, and he says, you give them something to eat. He responded, you give them something to eat. And just so you know, at the end of the story, we find out the people that got fed was 5,000 men, many people think it might have been not just 5,000 people, but 5,000 men and their families, because that's kind of how they counted crowds. So somewhere between like a typical UND football game attendance and a typical UND hockey game attendance, that's the number of people we're talking about, okay? Something like that. That's a good ballpark for you to think about if you've been to an Alaris Center or you've been to the Ralph Engelstad Arena. You give them something to eat, he responded. And so I got a couple questions this morning. Here's their reply. They said to him, should we go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give them something to eat? Are you saying we should go buy? 200 denarii was about 9 months of a living wage. So just 9 months of your salary. If you can imagine 5,000 or 15,000 people, how much money it costs to give them each a meal. That's probably close. Even modern day, something like that, right? So 9 months of a salary to try to... Are you saying we should try to figure out how to find that kind of money, Jesus? They're confused. They're very shocked. Here's the questions I have from this loaves and the fishes, because we'll find out that they have a few loaves and a few fish. Are you shocked at what Jesus asks? The disciples were completely shocked by what Jesus has asked. And by the way, these loaves that they will end up having... I'll tell you about that later. I'll get to it. They did not understand how could we, what are you asking, is really what they were trying to figure out. What do you mean when you say you give us something, give them something to feed, to eat? Because they knew that would be about 9 months' wages. They knew that an equivalent of that would be about a half a ton of flour to make the bread. Something like that, 1,000 pounds of flour or so. Think 200 one-gallon buckets. It would take a lot of time. Andrea makes bread at our house. We eat homemade bread for the most part, and it takes her several hours, 2, 3, 4 hours to make 9 loaves, and that lasts us 2 weeks. So that's a lot of time that it takes. Does what Jesus asks of you still shock you, or does it just seem doable? Sometimes it does, I agree. When I was young, I'm talking about when I was in my 20s, I was more prone to believe God for big things, and I was more prone to be willing to give Jesus all that I had in order for him to do miracles with it than I am today. I know that's true. I've recognized that in myself. That's actually part of why I love being around young people, is because they tend to have less that they're attached to. They tend to be willing, when they're passionate about Jesus, they tend to say, this is what Jesus asks, so I'm up for trying it. And as we get older and we accumulate more, as I have gotten older and I have accumulated more, it's been harder for me to say yes to it and easier for me to talk myself out of what Jesus might be asking that's pretty shocking. So I just want to pray a minute. Would you bow with me? Jesus, would you send us here at this church a bunch of young people who are passionate about Jesus and are willing to give all that they have to do whatever you ask them, that it might stir me up, that it might stir us up in our faith in you if we need it. Maybe it'll be people you raise within this church. We got a lot of kids here. We got a lot of high school kids. Might some of them become passionate, deeply passionate about you, ready to give up everything to follow you, that it might affect us, their parents, their grandparents, their teachers, in a way that would stir us up to believe you for bigger things. In your name I pray, amen. I have tended, as I've gotten older, to believe God for less, because I have more. And I think that is the tendency for most of us. I have become reluctant at times to be open-handed with all that I have, because when I look at what I have, it's a lot more. When I was 20, I had negative. Jesus, can you take that? You can have all that I have. I owe it more than I have to the bank. That's easy, right? When that's not the case, it becomes harder. And it can become easier for us to talk ourselves out of the shocking things Jesus might be asking us to do. So are you surprised by what he asks? If you are not surprised by what he asks, I think it would be really healthy for us to ask, why? Why is it relatively easy for me to follow Jesus? Maybe there's good reasons. Maybe there's not. Maybe there's changes in our perspective that we need to make. Maybe there's things that are in the way from us even hearing what he's trying to say to us. A life dependent on Jesus will often mean that we are bewildered, at least for a bit, and at least at times, if we're hearing from him correctly. Let's move on in this passage. I think we're intended to be shocked by what Jesus says. Verse 38, Jesus says, nope, I don't expect you to go get 200 denarii. I don't expect you to get $50,000 or whatever it would be and buy food for these people. How much do you have? How much food do you have right now? That's what he asked. How much do you have? How many loaves do you have? Why don't you go and see what you have right now? And when they found out, they said, 5 loaves and 2 fish. Yeah, there's actually 2 accounts. There's 2 miracles that Jesus does like this. There's a feeding of 5 and there's a feeding of 4,000. And in this account, there's 5 loaves and 2 fish. And so here's the the second question I have for you. Will you give Jesus what you have? All they had was 5 loaves and 2 fish. That's it. And by the way, these were not 5 sourdough artisan loaves from Panera and 2 15-pound northerns, which wouldn't have gone far for 5,000 people anyways, but this is more like 5 street taco tortillas and 2 fish the size of a hot dog. So really, it's barely enough for one person's lunch. That's pretty much, we're probably talking about like sardines or anchovies or something like that. And barley loaves, which are just flat bread, little tortillas, like that's somebody's lunch. What they have is a lunch, okay? Or you could have said, what I have is a Subway 6-inch. How far will that go, Jesus? They don't have much, but they give Jesus all that they have. And it doesn't make sense. How far can that possibly go? A 6-inch sub? A couple of hot dogs? This does not make sense to me, Jesus, but I will take a step in the direction you are asking me to. I don't understand it. I'm actually very confused about why this could possibly help, but because you're asking me to do it, I will give you what I have. That's what the disciples do. Maybe you want more meaningful connection with your friends, and you're not sure how to get it. But God asks you to take a small step of faith. Maybe you could do something like call a friend or text them and ask, would you want to go for lunch or coffee? Now, you maybe always do that, but how do you have a more meaningful connection? Maybe you just ask some questions you don't normally ask. Like, what is something that God has spoken to you about recently? Or what has been the best part of your year? Or if you want to make a really deep connection, ask this question. What's been the hardest part of your year? And why has it been so hard? Or, if you want to stay positive, what is something amazing that's happened to you this week or last month? And see where that conversation goes. Maybe it's giving. Last week, Seth mentioned giving. The concept of giving was what he talked about it as one of the ways that we can be free from sort of the me-first mentality. The first will be last. The last will be first. Maybe that's just like so overwhelming. Like the principle that's taught in the scriptures is to give a percentage, 10% of your giving to God. And you're like, I cannot even imagine that. Now, you could just say, I can't do it at all. So that just like the disciples, Jesus, I don't know how what I have could do anything. Make any difference, but they gave what they had. And Jesus did do something with it. And maybe for you, giving would just be, I'm just going to start doing something and see what God does with it. That could be. Maybe you have a really full schedule and you kind of want to grow in your faith. You can't think about how you could possibly be involved in a Bible study group or a home group that meets super regularly. But you know what? You do have, actually, I don't have my phone in my pocket. It's just my wallet. So pretend that's my phone. I left it in my car. I do have a phone in my pocket, and I can get the Bible app on here. So I could pick a reading plan that I could do, and maybe I could invite a few friends to read it with me. And we could talk about it, either in person or you can do that through the app. Or maybe prayer is something that you've always wanted to be better at, but you haven't figured out how to do it, and it's overwhelming to you to think about praying for even a half hour. That's fine. Maybe you could just take a simple step like set a timer for 5 minutes and talk to God about what's on your heart and see what happens. 5 minutes. I think one of the reasons why we talk ourselves out of doing anything in some of these areas is because we think we have to do everything. If I can't pray for an hour, why would I even start? I'll just not. If I can't read through the Bible in this calendar year, why would I even crack it? It's easy, it's really easy to talk ourselves out of not giving the loaves and the fish that we have, but God wants to do miracles with them. Maybe you really want to reach your friends for Jesus, or you have family members that you know need Jesus, and you don't know where to start. How do I even get that conversation going? What if you just said, I'm still not sure how to do that, how I'm going to share my faith with anybody else, but I know they need Jesus, so I will start praying every day for a minute on my way to work. For each of those people on my list and see what God does with that. Or maybe you heard the announcement about we have some interest in some missions trip and you're like, missions trip, another country, you have to be joking. I could never consider that. But you know what? You could just go to an interest meeting and find out more about it before you talk yourself out of it. And it doesn't mean you're committed to it, but this Wednesday you could just go and find out, what is that all about, before I get too overwhelmed. It could still be really overwhelming and you say no thanks. That's totally fine. But taking that step, God might use that in your life. Or maybe you know for sure you can't go long distance, but you could give up a weekend like it was announced locally to reach your city in August, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th here, where we try to reach out in our city. See, these are all little examples, and there's so many more, right? We could just keep going. So many more where Jesus isn't saying, I need you to go get 9 months of wages and feed this whole crowd. He's just saying, what do you got? I can actually do a lot with a little. I've done it so many times. You got a couple of street taco tortillas and a few hot dogs? Let's see what I can do with that. What if we just decided to trust him with what we had? What would be different? He wants us to, I think. Verse 42. This is the end of the story. I'm sorry. Did I skip a little bit? I did. He instructed them all, this is verse 39, he instructed them all to have the people sit down in groups in the grass. So they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties. Jesus is a really good administrator. It'll be easier to pass out this food if they're in groups. And he broke the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking up to heaven, he blessed and broke the loaves, and he gave them to his disciples to set before the people. He also divided the 2 fish among them all. Now, this is, if you've read this story, you are like me probably, and like, I want to see that. So 5 street taco tortillas. I'm going to keep breaking it. And all the disciples keep coming up with their baskets, and somehow there's piles on big somethings that they go, and I want to see that. I don't know how he did it. I'm not sure how he did that with fish. It's even more astounding. That's just completely astounding altogether. But that's what he did. Okay, so let's look on, and let's look at the end of the story. So everyone ate. 5,000, 15,000 individuals. I'm not sure. Maybe more. Everyone ate and was satisfied. So this is like all-you-can-eat buffet, fish, taco, tortillas, whatever, however much you want. They picked up, I love this part, they picked up 12 baskets full. Why was it 12? There were 12 disciples. Let's make sure each one of these guys gets the picture of what I can do with a little bit. 12 baskets full of pieces of bread and fish. Now those who had eaten the loaves were 5,000 men. So here's the last question. Will you watch for Jesus to do more than you expect or imagine when you give him what you have? Will you watch? The disciples got to sit there and watch it. It was just happening. I'd love to watch that. That would be amazing. And afterwards, are you done? Did you get all that you need? And they have baskets. I imagine something like garbage can lids of like piles. Like they're walking back like, I guess everyone got what they wanted. Talk about like, you know, like being shocked. Like, I don't know how you get through that without just like, I'm losing your mind. How do you not lose your mind? Watch for what Jesus will do more than you expect or imagine. I don't have a lot of time, you might say, but watch if you start giving him just a little bit of it. Praying, reading the Bible. Maybe it's, I really want to have better relationships in my family. What if you just gave 5 or 10 minutes of trying to create a connection with each person in your family? What God might do with that? Guys, it's just little things that God over time can do a lot with. This miracle is one of the few miracles. I can't remember if it's the only one. It might be the only one. That's in all 4 Gospels. The feeding of the 5,000 is a really important miracle to the early church, the early Christians. That's why it's in all 4 Gospels. I'm sorry, I said 5. 4 Gospels. It was really important, and here's why. It was connected in the Jewish understanding of how God provided for the Israelites by giving manna from heaven. So Jesus was like a new Moses, and in the miracle in the Old Testament, God sends down, it looks like dew at night, but in the morning it's bread or something like it. Actually, manna means what is it, because they didn't know what it was. So it's just kind of like, we just call our bread what is it from now on, because we don't know what it is. And every morning they could go out and collect it, grind it into flour, and make stuff with it. We still don't know exactly what it was. But Jesus did that, or God did that, for 500,000 people in the Old Testament, probably. And Jesus is, and that happened in the wilderness. You'll notice this miracle happens in the wilderness. There's a connection point here. Jesus is referred to as they were like sheep without a shepherd. It's because Jesus is being portrayed here as our deliverer, the one who's going to lead us to a place of safety, just like Moses led the Israelites to a place of safety. This is a really important miracle in an event in the life of Jesus, in the life of the early church. And just like the Israelites were amazed at what happened, all the people, all the disciples were amazed at what happened when Jesus did this miracle. So I want to give you one more example of how God can do a lot with a little. When I was a kid, my parents sponsored another kid with Compassion International. It's probably like $13 a month way back then, 15 or something like that. And so when I graduated high school and I went to college, I said, I kind of want to do that too. I thought that was a good idea. I remember that kid's name, but I wanted to do it. So I sponsored a kid for Compassion when I was in college. I didn't have much money, but I decided I could do that. It was probably 20 or 30 bucks, something like that. And he graduated out of the program. I sponsored another one. My first Compassion kid I actually connected with on WhatsApp and Facebook. He found me and said, hey, you're my Compassion sponsor. That was pretty cool. He's got a couple kids now. I've had another one, and he just graduated. So we started again. Same part of the world. It was always Indonesia. That's where I started. So now I have another Compassion kid in Indonesia. He's 5 or 6 years old. But now a couple of my kids in the last few years have decided they want to sponsor Compassion Kids. Can you see where I'm going with this? So one person decided, my parents, two people, to sponsor a Compassion Kid. And when you sponsor Compassion, Compassion International is an organization that partners with churches to provide some basic food, education, and clothing to kids that don't have it in hard parts of the world. And their lives are changed by what amounts to a couple of coffees a month for you and I forever. Like, changed forever. It's amazing what God can do with a little. Right now, a couple of my daughters are selling, we have way too many chicken eggs right now. We have way too many chickens. That was kind of for them, but they are selling chicken eggs to sponsor their Compassion Kid, which I love that they want to do that. But God can do a lot with a little bit, a little bit, a little bit. I wonder if you will be willing to watch what Jesus would do if you were willing to give a small gift in obedience to what he asks you to give to whoever or wherever it is, just to express yourself in generosity. Or maybe if you offer some of your time or your skill, what he'll do with that. Or maybe a small step of faith that you're reluctant to take, but you think, I could probably do that little step in that direction. What will God do? What will God do? Let's invite the worship team up. If you guys want to come up, we're going to close with this song, Great Things, because what I think God can do with our loaves and our fish is great things. I know he can do it if we're willing to give him what we have. If we're willing to give the little that we have, I think he can do something great with what we have. Let's stand and we can sing this declaration to God together. I'll pray. Jesus, thank you. You're a miracle worker. You're the way, the truth, and the life. And thank you, Jesus. Thank you for doing this miracle and showing us that you are our shepherd, you are our deliverer, just like you provided for the Israelites in the wilderness for decades, with morning after morning, miracle after miracle, all the bread to feed everybody was there. This was just one meal that Jesus provided, but you're the same God. And you can provide a lot with a little. You can do a lot with a little. A little bit of our faith in you, stepping forward in obedience to what you ask us, you can do a lot with it. I pray that we all here would this week even respond to what your Spirit speaks to us and take a small step in your direction to offer up what we have, to have the faith to give you what we have, that you might do something amazing with it, and that we might get to witness it and give you praise because of it.